Hello and welcome to this TechNet session on Internet Information Services 7.0 Diagnostics. My name is Sunny Brock. We will be covering some very useful features and techniques for diagnosing problems and troubleshooting Internet Information Services 7.0, which I will refer to as IIS 7 for the remainder of this session. Let's examine some of the features we'll be covering. In this session, we will discuss some very useful diagnostics and troubleshooting features new to IIS 7. Some of these techniques make troubleshooting practically effortless. For instance, the new Runtime Status and Control API allows you, through scripting, to get state information and to trigger events such as starting and stopping a site. The new Automatic Failed Request Tracing technology allows you to define error conditions, which, when triggered, write detailed error information to log files. And finally, we'll touch on adding tracing to your own custom modules. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology, and while we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or other versions of Microsoft products we may not spend time on. To assist you, we have listed areas where it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. Some experience with administering IIS 6 may be useful. Familiarity with Windows Server products, such as Windows Server 2003 or Windows Server 2008, will also help. Experience with scripting will also be helpful in gaining detailed information from the APIs used in IIS 7. To cover the topics mentioned on the earlier slide and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. The Runtime Status and Control API allows you to create powerful scripts and modules to assist in managing websites and applications in IIS 7. Automatic Failed Request Tracing allows you to set and forget triggers, which will return valuable error information when an error is encountered. Trace Events and Manage Modules will assist you in creating our own modules to help us troubleshoot in IIS. Next, we'll cover some of the highlights of IIS 7 tracing. In IIS 7, you can easily view the runtime status of the IIS server. You can access detailed runtime information about the status of sites, application pools, worker processes, and application domains. In fact, you can now get information about almost anything. To get at this information, you use the new Runtime Status and Control API, or RSCA, provided with IIS 7. RSCA gives you the ability to query detailed information. For example, you can look into an application pool and see all of the currently running requests and access detailed information about each of those requests. An RSCA is geared toward developers. It takes some of the burden off the hosting provider in that developers now have a tool that allows them to find detailed explanations if something goes wrong during the execution of their code. They can also start and stop sites, as well as recycle application pools. It is also handy for administrators and hosting environments because you are also able to use the apt-command-exe command line tool or the IIS manager to resolve a hanging request problem and determine which script is consuming your CPU's resources. Apt-command.exe is covered in greater detail in the TechNet sessions ITE 302 and ITE 303 in the series about IIS 7. Another useful feature in IIS 7 is the ability to enable tracing to examine all of the steps that a request takes as it moves through the request pipeline from start to finish. This gives the ability to customize your web components to build servers for any need. You may run into a situation where an unknown problem arises because of interplay between custom modules. This is just the right situation to enable tracing and create the paper trail for each request to help you quickly track down the problem. Failed requests can now be traced automatically. You can define the failure events that you're interested in tracing, and the system will log those events for you automatically. Enabling failed request event buffering, or FREB, also referred to as failed request tracing, captures trace logs for failed requests that are encountered without incurring the performance penalty of saving successfully completed requests. With FREB, you can capture valuable tracing information even if the problems are intermittent or hard to reproduce. It is easy to configure FREB to capture trace logs for 404 errors, for example, or for requests that take more than a specified amount of time to complete. All modules which ship with IIS, as well as third-party modules, provide tracing information during request processing. We'll talk more about FREB later in this session. Tracing in ASP.NET has been unified with IIS 7 tracing. The tracing information is written to the same file in a consistent format. You can now view all managed code, ASP, ASP.NET, and IIS events in one place, making tracing much simpler. Now we'll discuss the Runtime Status and Control API. RSCA provides the ability to obtain the runtime status and to control the state of every aspect of your web server, application pools, application domains, websites, worker processes, and virtual directories. RSCA is designed to provide a consistent API for controlling runtime state across all server objects. You no longer need to know a number of different interfaces as you did in IIS 6. Using RSCA, you can develop your own infrastructure to monitor and control the state of your websites by accessing the RSCA object hierarchy that maps directly to the worker processes in your application pools. RSCA is designed to expose detailed runtime state covering all aspects of the objects in question. You now have easy access to state information that was difficult to obtain in IIS 6. Have you ever wanted to know what requests are executing in a worker process that's consuming 100% of the CPU? Or which application domains are loaded for a particular site? Now you can, with RSCA and the IIS 7 administration tools. RSCA data is available from the IIS 7 WMI provider and managed API, Microsoft Web Administration. The IIS 7 administration GUI and command line tool provide administrators with an interactive interface to this data. Next, we will introduce RSCA in a demonstration using the new Internet Information Services IIS Manager. In this demonstration, you will see how RSCA allows you to view executing requests. In this demonstration, we will use RSCA to view executing requests. We're going to use the new Internet Information Services Manager, or IIS Manager, to view requests. Before we view some executing requests, let's begin by exploring the new management console in IIS 7. The IIS Manager is a significant improvement over previous management tools. It brings into one place the management of all aspects of the web server and ASP.NET. In the Connections pane, we have a list of all the servers that are available. In this case, we have only one server. By selecting the name in the Connections pane, we can manage all the application pools, websites, and other internet services on the server. This would include FTP sites if you have them installed. In the Home pane, we have a view of the features that we can manage using IIS Manager. The features listed here will vary depending on the IIS modules you have installed. If you group the features by their category, a Health and Diagnostics category appears. You can use the Worker Processes feature to view information about running processes and requests. In this case, we only have one application pool, the default application pool. The Worker Process feature allows you to examine the running details of each application pool. If you choose an application pool, you can use this feature to show all of the current requests. At present, there are no requests, so let's create one. To create a request that we can view, we are going to use a small ASPX page that we have created for this demonstration, called sleep.aspx. We have written this ASPX page in C#. The page load function acts as a trigger to execute code during the page load event. We pass a value in milliseconds to the system threading thread sleep function. The application sleeps for 10 seconds. After the 10 seconds have passed, the application returns a very simple web page. Let's go to Internet Explorer and load this page. While the page loads, remember there is a 10-second sleep function. We'll return to the IIS Manager. Now, we'll click Show All to display the request in the request pipeline. In our case, there is only one request that we can view. There is a lot of information that you can view about each request. There is the website ID, the request URL, the type of HTTP request, in this case GET, the client IP address, the request state, the module name handling the request at present, and the time elapsed. That is how you generate an event and view the RSC information using the IIS Manager. You can list the currently executing requests and examine the state of those requests in detail. This is useful in troubleshooting large numbers of requests where worker processes may be stalled or shut down, needing to be restarted. appcommand.exe is a command line tool for managing IIS 7. It allows you to access all the key management functionality through a set of objects that can be used from the command line or from scripts. For example, you could create and configure sites, apps, application pools, and virtual directories, start and stop sites, and recycle application pools. You can also list running worker processes and examine currently executing requests similar to the previous task. To demonstrate, we will rerun the Sleep ASPX page we used earlier. There is not quite as much information available to view in the request detail output by the app command utility. There is the request URL, the type of HTTP request, in this case GET, and the time elapsed. It is easy to use the app command utility to view details about executing requests. The app command utility allows you to easily pipe commands together as well as run commands in batch files. In an environment where there are hundreds of sites, you can quickly find out which sites are currently handling requests and how many. Let's discuss the RSCA object interface and some of its associated properties. The purpose of runtime status and control is to expose monitoring and diagnostics data during runtime in a way that can be easily accessed by administration tools and scripts. There are a number of RSCA interfaces, including IRSCA WAS and IRSCA W3SBC. First, let's look at IRSCA WAS. IRSCA WAS retrieves IRSCA app pool and IRSCA worker process pointers that represent services running on an accessible web server. As the name suggests, the IRSCA app pool and IRSCA worker process pointers represent application pools and worker process, respectively. Application pools connect one or more applications to one or more worker processes. Application pools help separate applications from each other, and this isolation increases their security and reliability. A worker process is user mode code whose role is to process requests, such as processing requests to return a static page. Worker processes use HTTP.sys to receive requests and to send responses by using HTTP. Worker processes also run application code, such as ASP.NET applications and XML web services. You can configure IIS to run multiple worker processes that serve different application pools concurrently. For example, in a corporate data center, you may see 10 application pools with 20 to 30 worker processes serving requests. In a hosted environment, there may be several hundred application pools with 3 to 5 times that number of worker processes serving requests. Note that you can enumerate collections of application pools and worker processes. For example, for a specific application pool, you can enumerate all of the worker processes as well as getting the application pool's name and state. Likewise, within a worker process, you can look at the details of the application pool that is running and retrieve its state. You can also control the worker process, for example, by starting or stopping it. You may need to restart a worker process that fails to initialize correctly. You can use an instance of IRSCA app pool to view your application pool's name or state and to enumerate its worker processes. You can stop, start, or recycle an application pool. In a similar way, you can use an instance of IRSCA worker process to view your work processes and their PID, GUID, state, ISAPI extensions and filters, currently executing requests, and currently loaded application domains. You can also enumerate application domains using IRSCA worker process. You can use an instance of IRSCA app domain to retrieve the application domain ID, its virtual and physical paths, its site ID, and its state. You can also use this to unload the application domain. If you have several hundred applications running on a hosted server, this is a great way to find out more details about the applications being run. The same is true for HTTP requests. You can enumerate your virtual sites using IRSCA W3 SVC. You access state information about each of your sites and control them, for example, starting and stopping individual sites. This might be useful if you are hosting legacy sites or other sites that have a history of instability. You could write scripts to check whether the site was in a failed state and restart the site if necessary. Let's move on and view a demonstration where we will look at RSCA objects using the RSCA API in an application. In this demonstration, we will use the API to write a small application to look at currently executing requests. In this demonstration, we are going to write a managed code application to obtain IIS runtime status data using Microsoft Web Administration. The file mgitappoolstatus.cs contains our application. It is a simple C# console application. Notice that we have included the namespace Microsoft.web.administration. This new namespace is installed with IIS 7 and provides a managed interface to much of the IIS 7 management facilities, including RSCA. The first thing that we do is create an instance of Server Manager from the Microsoft Web Administration namespace. In this case, the constructor argument is null. A null constructor creates an instance of the localhost server. You can create instances of remote servers using non-null constructors. We store the Server Manager instance in smlocalhost. Using smlocalhost, we can retrieve the collection of application pools. Using this collection, we can enumerate the application pools and loop through each one in turn. For each application pool, we first write out its name. Then we get the worker processes that are serving that application pool and store them in the WP variable we've set up to store the worker processes object. For each worker process, we get a collection containing the requests in that worker process. And then it is very simple to write to the console all the details of each request, including its URL and the current module that it is running in. Finally, to show the power of the Microsoft Web Administration API, we are also going to write out to the console details about the application domains. We will print out the virtual path, the physical path, and the runtime state of the application domain. Because this is a C# application, we need to compile it before we can execute it. To make things easier, it has been compiled for this demonstration, and we have called the executable mgetAppPoolStatus.exe. If we execute this application, we find that at present, there are no requests in the pipeline. Now, if we reload our web page containing the 10-second delay, and then re-execute our application, we find that it lists the active request and all its details. This can be very useful in troubleshooting issues in a large hosting environment with many websites. We've reviewed managed APIs using RSCA data, so let's move on. Now we'll look at automatic failed request tracing. This allows you to set triggers, which will return valuable error information when an error is encountered. Next, let's take an in-depth look at how the tracing infrastructure works. The new IIS7 Core Server Pipeline architecture provides a high level of component granularity. This results in user-selectable installable components. You are able to install just the feature modules that you require, allowing you to deploy very thin, task-specific servers. Here you will see how each of these modules work with the IIS7 tracing infrastructure to trace a request and log the output from that trace. In IIS7, the tracing infrastructure is very flexible. Both trace event providers and trace event consumers are simply modules. You can choose which modules you wish to use. For example, you could use event tracing for Windows, ETW, or you could use failed request tracing, which is the automatic fail request tracing infrastructure in IIS7. In addition to choosing one of these existing modules, you can create your own. Indeed, you can create both consumer and provider modules and plug them into the tracing infrastructure. Your own providers and consumers can then be used in any place where you would normally use the built-in providers and consumers. For example, you can, through the IIS Management Console, define a trace condition, such as a 404 file not found error, that may occur as a result of a request. This request is written to the trace configuration file. When the web server begins to process a request, the pipeline modules read the trace configuration information for that provider. Then, when an event that matches the tracing configuration occurs, such as the 404 file not found error we defined earlier, the pipeline module raises a trace event. The trace event is then delivered back to the source consumer module that registered the trace event. That consumer module is responsible for doing something with that event, such as writing it to a log file. Finally, the consumer module handles the event. In our example, the trace consumer module writes detailed information on the error to an XML file with an associated styles sheet file to the c:\inetpub\logs\faildirectlogfiles\w3svc1 folder. All IIS7 infrastructure events are raised through this infrastructure using the same API, including all of the tracing in the IIS7 diagnostic tools. Currently, in the Core Web Server Pipeline module, we have more than 300 events that are raised if you enable tracing. In addition to these, you can use the API to create your own events. Next, we'll look at the automatic failed request tracing features new to IIS7. Large data centers and hosting providers will appreciate the enhanced productivity leveraged by the new automatic failed request tracing capabilities of IIS7. It is no longer necessary for your busy administrators to try to reproduce difficult scenarios and hard-to-find problems that occur intermittently or only under certain circumstances. Your team will appreciate the ease of defining specific failure conditions, going on to productive, less frustrating activities, and checking back later to see the results of the trace. The IIS7 automatic failed request trace logging feature enables server administrators to define error conditions for IIS to look out for. Error conditions can range from slow or hung requests to the familiar status codes IIS sends back during error conditions, like server 500 error. When configured, if IIS7 detects one of these error conditions, it will automatically log detailed trace events of everything that happened during the request which led up to the error. This is called failed request tracing. Furthermore, you do not have to turn automatic failed request tracing on for every website and every URL on your server. Instead, you can apply automatic failed request tracing to a specific URL or a specific file request. Not only does this reduce the amount of tracing information that could be logged, but it also ensures that this powerful feature has as little performance impact as possible on your server. Another feature of our FREB infrastructure is that the trace persists for the life of the process. If there is a failure, the trace of the whole request is written to a log file. With this small impact on performance and the significant gain in information retrieved by the FREB trace, it is feasible to turn it on for newly deployed sites or as a means of verifying that sites are running error-free. This adds a fresh, proactive stance to the issue of hosting many servers and sites. Let's look at three common scenarios. In this demonstration, you will see how easy it is to configure automatic failed request tracing in IIS 7 to trace a failed request and then troubleshoot the failure. In this demonstration, we will create a simple web page, configure IIS so that requests to this page fail, and then we will use automatic failed request tracing to determine the problem. Here is a very simple ASP page called test.asp. All it does is write out today's date using the date function. We can switch to Internet Explorer and test that this page does indeed show today's date. For the purposes of this demonstration, we'll configure IIS to ensure that requests for this page fail. To do this, we go into the security category and select ISAPI and CGI restrictions. Here we can specify the ASP and CGI features that can be used on the server. Therefore, we'll disable active server pages. Next, when we return to the browser and refresh our simple ASP page, now the page returns an error. If this was a live server and you had to resolve this problem, but it was not immediately obvious what was wrong, what would you do next? In IIS 7, you can enable failed request tracing. You must enable failed request tracing on a per-website basis. Therefore, you select the website you want, in this case, the default website. Then you can choose to change where the trace logs are stored and how many you keep before they are recycled. We will leave these settings at default. Now we have turned on failed request tracing for the default website. Next, we need to create a rule that will match the failure that we had when requesting our ASP page earlier. To create a rule, we open up the Failed Request Tracing Rules feature and add a rule. We want to make the rule match the type of request that failed as closely as possible. On a busy server, this can be very important, as it will limit the number of requests that we will trace. In this case, we are only interested in ASP content, so we select ASP and click Next. Then we want to specify the status codes that we wish to trace. In this case, we are only interested in 404 status codes. If you wish, you can specify multiple status codes using a comma-separated list. Also notice that if you do not specify the subcode, then it will match all subcodes. In addition, you can choose to trace based on the time the request takes rather than the status code. This is very useful when your request is delayed or hangs, but you do not get a status code back. You can narrow down the request that the trace provider traces and the activity taking place. You can also specify how much detail you want to have in the trace. We will leave this set to the default value of verbose. Now that we have created a trace definition, we can return to our browser and refresh our web page. This should produce a failed request log. let's open the failed request log and examine its contents. In the failed rec logs files folder, we will find a subfolder for every website on our server. Therefore, if you have failed request tracing enabled for multiple sites on your server, then their requests will go into individual folders. The failed request log for the request that we have just generated is called fr00001.xml. This is the first trace, and subsequent traces that we create are numbered sequentially. Because the log is in XML format, we could use a number of different XML parsers to view or process the output. To make it easier for you to view these files, there are standard style sheets for failed request log files that are bundled with IIS. In this example, you have the request the page refreshed earlier, the website ID of the site serving the request, the app pool the request is running in this case, the default app pool. The request is assigned a process ID. The request status code, in this case, the status code that we find in the log file is 404.2, which matches the trace filter that we created earlier. In the trace highlight section, you will usually find the cause of the problem. In this case, the log has put the cause of the problem as security denied by ISAPI restriction. This is exactly the problem that we created for this demonstration, so you have no need to probe any further. However, should the problem not be clear from the highlights section, you can click on the trace detail. In the trace detail, you will find every trace message. Every key event in the request pipeline is recorded in the trace log from the beginning of the request right through to the end of the request. The trace includes the complete request, showing each step in the process beginning with the request starting. The steps in the authentication sequence, then the ASP module in which the error occurred. Following the error, the trace also logs the events that take place and the returning error information to the browser. In this case, the error information is the 404.2 status code. To summarize, we create an ASP page with a request failure, we enabled failed request tracing in IIS Manager, and we found the cause of the request failure recorded in the failed request trace logs. We'll continue by examining ASPX page event tracing. IIS 7 unifies the page tracing in ASP, ASP.NET, and IIS itself. Within all versions of ASP.NET, you can configure page tracing in the same unified way. To configure page tracing, you first set page trace equal to true in the page declaration. Then you put trace.warn and trace.write statements into your ASPX pages to trace page events. Then you must configure ASP.NET to use FREB failed request tracing. To do this, you must specify that ASP.NET is the provider. You set this in the IIS7 applicationhost.config configuration file by adding an add provider element to the trace areas section. You set the area attribute on this element to page, and set the verbosity attribute to the level of detail that you require, for example, verbose. Finally, you put in detailed filter definitions, such as specific status codes and times. Events are logged for both write and warn calls. The event includes the connection ID, activity ID, URI, and the message from the call itself. Now we'll demonstrate the page event tracing features we've just discussed and see them in action. In this demonstration, we will look at how event tracing in ASPX pages has been integrated with IIS 7 request tracing. In this demonstration, we are going to enable request tracing in ASPX pages. First, we remove any failed request tracing rules that we have created previously. To demonstrate request tracing in ASPX, we use a simple ASPX page called trace.aspx. At the start of the page, we have set the trace attribute to true. The trace ASP page first produces a trace write event. Next, a trace warning executes. And finally, a write to the response buffer. Let's return to Internet Explorer and execute the trace ASPX page. Setting trace equal to true causes the ASPX to dump out a lot of information to the browser. This first request to an ASP.NET page takes just a minute because the ASP.NET is compiling the resources it needs to satisfy the request. While this information is very useful, it is not integrated with IIS, and therefore only includes ASP.NET information. Notice that the trace warning we execute appears in red. Let's return to IIS Manager to turn on request tracing. First, we add a new trace rule. Because the page trace.aspx does not have any errors, but we want to capture it in our trace, we set the status code to 200. This means that our rule will trace successful page requests. We select the ASP.NET trace provider within the ASP.NET provider. We can select many areas. We are only interested in page requests, so we clear all the other areas. Now we return to our browser and refresh the page. When we list the files in the failed request log files folder, we find that there is now a second log file. Let's examine the log file. The log file has both ASP.NET and IIS trace data integrated. Now you can examine the ASPX page events intermixed with IIS events. If we scroll down this page, we find the warning messages from the page logged with all their details. In addition, these events appear in sequence with all the trace information from the request pipeline. This should give you a good idea how to use trace events in ASPX pages. In the last part of this session, we'll cover trace events and manage modules. This feature makes it easier to create your own modules to help troubleshoot IIS problems. Let's take a look at how unified web platform tracing works with the tracing infrastructure. As you might have already realized, there is now a unified infrastructure for tracing events across IIS, ASP, and custom modules. All of the modules in the request pipeline, core modules, and custom modules can now register and be providers of tracing events. As you saw in the previous demonstration, an ASP.NET page can be traced by adding write and warn calls to the page. Earlier, you saw how ASP.NET on IIS 6 has its own request pipeline that is separate from the IIS 7 request pipeline. You can write modules that register for a pipeline event, such as the request begin event or request end event. Within IIS 7, the ASP.NET pipeline architecture is emulated so that any ASP.NET pipeline module that you wrote for IIS 6 will also work in IIS 7. You may be wondering how you can use the FREB with the trace providers provided by the ASP.NET pipeline modules. It is basically the same as if you're using the .NET framework on IIS 6. In the next demonstration for this session, we'll take a look at how to add events to manage modules. In this demonstration, we will create a managed pipeline module, and then we will add tracing to that module. We will then show how tracing from this custom request pipeline module is fully integrated into the tracing infrastructure in IIS 7. In this demonstration, we are going to take a pipeline module written in C#. Then we will show how easy it is to enable tracing for it in this module. First, we remove the failed request tracing rule that we used in the last demonstration. Next, we need to re-enable active server pages on our server. To demonstrate our module, we're going to use an ASP page that we used in a demonstration earlier in the session, the failed request ASP page. Again, this page is very simple, only displaying today's date. we will use an example IS7 module written in C#. We have called the module statusmodule.cs. We are going to add tracing to this module, but first, let's briefly review how an IS7 module is structured. When you write a module, you first create an init method. In the init method, you specify where in the request pipeline this module goes. To do this, you create an instance of the event handler. In this module, we create an instance of the application end request event handler. You can create handlers in IS7 for many other reasons. Then we implement the handler for the request end. In our module, we write out information about each worker process at the end of each request. This creates a simple page footer. This is a crude way of creating a page footer, but it is adequate for demonstrating tracing in managed modules. Next, let's add tracing to the module. To add tracing to your module and route its trace events into IS7, you must use System Diagnostics Trace. To use System Diagnostics Trace, we add a using statement to the beginning of the source code. Then we must declare a variable to hold the trace source. We are going to use the variable TSStatus. Next, we initialize the trace source in the init method. The name of the trace source is important, as we will use it later to reference the trace source in the configuration. To add a new trace event, we use the trace event method on the trace source object TSStatus. We will add the start and end trace events to our application end request method. We recommend that you add at least a start and an end trace event to your request method. Now we must compile the module and install it. First, we compile the module. When compiling the module using C# compiler, it is important to note the use of /debug and /d:trace switches. You must use these switches to compile the trace events into the binary. Failing to compile with these switches will mean that our module won't have any events in it. To add the module to our site's configuration, we first need to copy the module over to the website's bin folder. So we create the bin folder and copy the module DLL across. Now we must enable the module. We will use the IIS manager to enable the module. We are going to add our new module to the default website. To do this, we use the modules feature in IIS manager. In the modules feature, we add a new managed module. Since we have placed our new module in the bin folder, it is available for us to add to the website using IIS Manager. We must make sure the application pool that the site is configured to run in is configured to run as local system. The reason for this is that our module calls APIs in Microsoft Web Administration that are restricted to administrators because they obtain runtime information on IIS 7. To do this, we modify the default application pool settings so that the process model identity is set to local system. Before proceeding any further, let's test the module by loading a simple HTML page in our browser. The browser displays the page contents followed by the worker process information returned from our module. Now we are ready to use the tracing that we added to our module. At this point, we have a managed module that we have plugged into the request pipeline for our default website. Our module adds a simple footer to each web page. The footer contains information about worker processes. We have added three tracing events into our module. The first event indicates the start of our module's end request processing. The second trace event is an example of a warning level trace event. The final trace event indicates the end of our module's processing. Now we are going to configure our failed request tracing to use the trace events that we have added to our module. First, we return to the failed request tracing rules feature of IIS Manager. Let's add a new rule to turn tracing on for our module's events. We are going to configure our rule to trace successful requests. This is because we want our trace events logged, even though we know that there are no errors in our web page. We are only interested in ASP.NET events, so we clear all other types of providers. In addition, we only want trace events for our module, so we clear all other areas. To save time, we have a prepared web.config file that contains the settings you require to define our trace source, TS source, and to wire it up to a default switch and the IIS trace listener. To do this, we have created a system diagnostic session in our web.config file. It contains a shared listener section, a switches section, and a sources section. In the switches section, we have created a default switch and set it to all. In the shared listener section, we have added the IIS trace listener. Finally, in the sources section, we bring all this together by adding our source, TS status, configuring it with the default switch, and linking it to the IIS trace listener. If we return to the failed request log folder and list the files, we find that the last failed request to log is fr00000.xml. Now when we refresh our web page, another failed request log should be created. Because we have not modified our web page, it is possible that it will be served from the server's cache, thereby avoiding our module. To ensure that the page is served anew rather than from cache, we simply update the timestamp of the web page. So now we return to our browser and refresh the page. It is no different from before. However, when we return to the failed request logs file folder, we find that we have created a new failed request log file. If we open the failed request log file, we find that it contains the trace events that we coded into our module, along with information about the whole request pipeline. There is our module's start end request, its warning event, and its end end request. Therefore, we now have our failed request log events mixed with all of the IIS events. In conclusion, you can now add tracing to your own IIS modules, and you can fully integrate your module's tracing with IIS tracing in the same log files. Let's examine new troubleshooting tools. IIS 7 introduces a number of new features to help monitor and debug application problems. One of the most important new troubleshooting tools is the Runtime Status and Control API, which is commonly referred to as RSCA. It is designed to give detailed runtime information about the server from deep within IIS 7. The RSCA API is a new programmatic interface for accessing and manipulating the runtime state of websites and application pools, application domains, worker processes, and it even allows you to view the currently executing requests. The RSCA capabilities come in very handy when you're investigating server issues or tuning server performance, both for being able to quickly see what's going on in the system, as well as to control the server when performing troubleshooting. The RSCA API is accessible through the GUI IIS Manager and appcommand.exe. You can use these tools to easily see such critical functions as the processes and requests currently being executed on the server. IIS 7 makes it possible to troubleshoot failures without having to manually reproduce them. The failed request tracing feature enables server administrators to predefine error conditions to monitor. This allows administrators to capture trace logs for a pre-configured failure condition automatically, all while avoiding the performance penalty of saving logs for all requests. With failed request tracing, administrators can capture the valuable tracing information when errors occur, even if they are intermittent or hard to reproduce. Error conditions can range from slow or hung requests to the familiar status codes IIS sends back during error conditions like Server 500 error. When configured, if IIS 7 detects an error condition, it can automatically log detailed trace events of everything that happened during that request which led up to the error. This might prove to be very helpful to web hosters who manage many sites. If a web host notices a specific error affecting one of their sites, they could easily deploy failed request tracing to all their sites, monitoring for the same error. This would help them better avoid failures and maintain high availability. The underlying tracing infrastructure is exposed to IIS modules using the server extensibility model, allowing all server components, whether they ship with IIS or are developed by third parties, to relay detailed tracing information during request processing. This allows developers and system administrators to create custom-managed modules to take advantage of the unified tracing model. Developers can now write tracing modules that provide new ways to process and output traces, like a module to save IIS tracing information to a SQL server or to a text file. The new IIS 7 Custom Errors module allows for more detailed error information to be sent back to the web browser. It is set up by default for local requests and can be easily configured to provide the same feature to remote clients. Instead of just seeing a concise error message, you'll now see detailed information about the error and helpful suggestions on how to resolve it. Detailed error messages are turned on by default for local users, so there is nothing to configure or set up to use them. Detailed error messages offer plain language explanations of what might have caused the errors and detailed instructions on suggested ways to fix them. Let's see how you can use these tools in practice. In this demonstration, we will view detailed error messages, and then we will deploy detailed error messages. We will then enable substatus code messages. We're all used to the error messages we've seen when we've typed in an incorrect file name on our favorite website. The file not found error message. The error displayed will usually be either a brief system error page or a custom page defined with a custom message or designed to look like the website it's being hosted on. IIS 7 offers a new option, detailed error messages. We can easily simulate an error by typing an incorrect file name into the address box. Detailed error messages offer more detailed information, which is grouped into individual sections. The error summary is the first section. It displays the error code along with the error description. More detailed error information is in the next section. Here we will find specific information, such as which module the error occurred in, or more helpful in our case, the physical path to the file requested. The next section contains helpful information, such as likely causes for the error, as in our case, the file specified does not exist. There is a section of things you can try in order to fix the problem. In our case, we could create the content expected. The final section offers links and other resources to assist you in solving the error which triggered the message. As you can see, detailed error messages are a useful tool in troubleshooting problems in your hosting environment. Detailed error messages provide in-depth information about your websites, as well as some detailed steps to assist you in troubleshooting errors. You would typically want to keep the sensitive information provided by detailed error messages in the care of trusted individuals within your organization. However, you have the option of keeping it deployed locally, or deploying it on both local and remote machines, or not displaying the detailed error messages at all. By default, detailed error messages are only displayed locally on the server machine itself. As previously stated, we can also make the detailed error messages available to remote requests as well. Now the detailed messages we saw in the previous task are available to all requests which encounter errors. It is also possible to disable detailed error messages altogether, perhaps as an extra layer of security. After we disable the detailed error messages, the local server and the remote client requests will receive the non-detailed error message. Many HTTP errors have substatus codes. By default, the custom errors configuration in IIS 7 doesn't differentiate based on substatus codes. This means that a 404 error message would apply also to a 404.3 error. We can best simulate this by creating a new file type not recognized by the IIS MIME map, and then typing the file name into the address bar and trying to view the page. To differentiate between the errors with specific substatus codes, we must add a response for the associated error code. Upon refreshing the page, we see that the correct error message currently appears. While we had to configure it manually, it is useful to use in troubleshooting between a vague 404 error message to a more specific MIME map policy issue. Let's review and configure logging options. In this demonstration, we will create a managed pipeline module, and then we will add tracing to that module. We will then show how tracing from this custom request pipeline module is fully integrated into the tracing infrastructure in IIS 7. Log files in IIS have always been a useful troubleshooting tool in hosting websites and servers. However, in IIS 7, log file, logging options have been improved upon. There are now many more useful options we can configure. For example, we can configure logging per site or per server, the log file format, and which fields are logged. We can log the location of the log files. We can also select the file encoding we choose to use. Log file rollover allows us to determine at what point new log files are created. We can assign a schedule based on hourly, daily, weekly, or monthly settings and set a maximum file size. Alternatively, we can choose to create new log files when a certain file size is reached. We can also choose not to create new log files at all. Using local time for naming and rollover will make it easier to sync log events to the time on your server. Let's review what we've covered in this session. In this session, we discussed how you can use the new tracing features of IIS 7. You have seen how tracing in IIS 7 allows access to the runtime status of IIS and the runtime control of IIS. You have seen how the new unified and extensible tracing subsystem provides an API that gives programmers full access to the tracing system. Built upon this new API are the new IIS management tools. We discussed how the IIS Manager GUI could use the automatic failed request tracing features of IIS 7 and how these features significantly improve failure tracing. In particular, we showed how automatic tracing includes features to avoid the need to reproduce faults to trace them. Finally, we discussed how you could use the new tracing subsystem in your own modules. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help you. For the most comprehensive technical information about Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITE-301 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Get a jump on evaluating Windows Server 2008 with technical insights from Windows Server Team in Introducing Windows Server 2008. This practical introduction delivers real-world implementation scenarios and pragmatic advice for administering Windows Server in the enterprise. There are also a number of good books available from other publishers. Professional IIS 7 by Ken Schaefer, Jeff Cochran, and Scott Forsyth, published by ROCKS, is a complete reference to IIS 7, both for developers and administrators. In addition to covering the common administrative tasks, this book takes an in-depth look at IIS 7 extensibility and operations management. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. IIS 7 Implementation Administration by John Paul Mueller, published by Cybex, is designed to ease the learning curve for experienced system administrators and IT professionals, helping them work with developers using the new tools of IIS 7. It concentrates on the crucial skills needed to get up and running quickly with the new product. This book begins by explaining the new interface and basic IIS configuration, and then moves on to ASP.NET configuration. Readers will come to understand the new security model and learn how to work with developers to improve application performance. How to Cheat at IIS 7 Server Administration by Chris Adams, published by Syngress, will help administrators migrating from IIS 6 to get up to speed fast on the new version. IIS 7 is the perfect product for the How to Cheat series. How to Cheat promises to help get IIS up and running as quickly and safely as possible. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, which includes e-learning, MS Press books, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. This curriculum is offered in instructor-led environments. It offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals, support, and implement solutions using Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is 6045, which covers administering IS7 web servers and is available as an online course. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills for implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The Skills Assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which has links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including security and patch management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft Certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to become a fully certified system administrator, MCSA, or system engineer, MCSE, or a desktop specialist, MCDST. The new Microsoft Certified Technology Specialist, MCTS, and Microsoft Certified IT Professional, MCITP credentials provide IT professionals with a simpler and more targeted framework to showcase their technical skills in addition to the skills that are required for specific job roles. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which you may find interesting. To help explain this further, here's Ian Brackenbury, TechNet Subscriptions Product Manager.
TechNet Plus is an essential, premium, web-enabled, and live support resource that provides IT professionals with fast and easy access to Microsoft experts, software, and technical information, enhancing IT productivity, control, and planning. With convenient access to all these resources in one online location, TechNet Plus provides you with what you need to help you evaluate products and learn new skills, plan for and deploy new technologies, and support and maintain your IT environment. For evaluation and learning, you get access to all Microsoft full-version software for evaluation without time limits. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full-version software, you can make informed decisions about new technologies at your own pace. You also receive access to the latest betas before public release. Be the first to try out the latest pre-release versions of Microsoft operating systems, servers, and business applications. TechNet Plus also offers quarterly training resources, including select Microsoft e-learning courses for free, so you can keep your skills current, prepare for a certification exam, or get ready for a specific project. For planning and deployment, the TechNet Library includes resources to help you plan for and deploy new technologies in your IT environment, including a complete knowledge base, resource kits, utilities, and technical training. You also get exclusive tools like System Center Capacity Planner to accurately plan for and deploy Exchange Server and System Center Operations Manager. And to stay informed, your subscription also includes a free subscription to TechNet Magazine, the Microsoft Journal for IT Professionals. For support and maintenance, TechNet Plus comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. You can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve your mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed news groups. You can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to your technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. You also get access to TechNet library resources to help you support and maintain your IT environment, including security updates and service packs. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation software and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. For more information or to purchase a TechNet Plus subscription, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions.